Joining us on the phone is Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern University Central DuPage Hospital's medical director. Kevin, good morning, and thank you as always for joining us.
Good morning, Dean. Beautiful day today, huh?
I'll bet you're not going to be on the golf course today.
Yeah, it was easy to say yes to Ryan when I saw it was an 80% chance of rain on Sunday.
Well, it's going to be pretty much going to be like that for the rest of the day and early part of the week. But next week, we may have a little difficulty finding you because I think it's going to be nice next weekend. So all the talk this week, Kev, is about the reopening of the slow reopening of different states around America. Some people either with the relaxation of regulations or simply defying the regulations and doing what they want to do and, you know, going to socialize, going to gathering places. At this hour of the morning on a Sunday morning, some people going to church services, defying the orders. What's your take on all this? I mean, are we at a point with this where it now is safer to be in social settings like that?
Well, you know, Dean, it's interesting. We've had, what, two and a half months to think about this. We've been in self-lockdown, we'll call it, for, I want to say, 60-something plus days. So hopefully during that time, we've thought about how we could wisely go back and do this. So when you look at church congregations, hopefully that they would look and say, we can do this safely and still physically distance while doing this. Restaurants are the same. Hopefully they've had an opportunity to look and say, if we were going to reopen, we could do this safely. So we're hitting a point, I think, where the public is going to be so anxious to get things up and moving that as we ease back into it, we hopefully have been thinking about how we can do it as safely as possible. Because, you know, when you look at what happened in Wisconsin in the bars, I can tell you all the healthcare professionals up there are cringing of what's going to happen 14 days from now as we see a potential second spike because we weren't smart in how we opened.
What about restaurants now? Because I've been seeing reports on television in which restaurants are saying, we're not putting tables right next to each other. We're putting rows of plants in between people. People are not going to sit at bars, apparently. Are all those things safe to do?
Yeah, you know, at least from the restaurant point of view, you know, there's a big difference between a restaurant and a bar, obviously. In a bar, you're mobile. You got told to stay in one place. You know, you move around quite a bit. Certainly, in some of the bars, you can do seating far enough away. But I do think you're going to see a lot more restaurants that are going to have physical things that are going to essentially block you in. Two reasons there. One, it is going to keep you in a contained area. And two, it's going to actually give you some confidence as well. So if you tell me that I'm not only am I 6 feet or 8 feet away from anyone else, but I also have some sort of partition that is protecting me, okay, I'm going to be a little bit more comfortable there going, you know, in to eat.
I'm still amazed at the number of people that I see out in public places. I don't mean just outside. People who are, you know, walking or exercising outside by themselves, but I mean people in stores who are outside without masks on. Talk to me about the danger of this. Clearly, they don't feel it's very important for them to be wearing a mask, or they find it uncomfortable. I don't know what the thinking is behind it.
Yeah, you know, it's the danger plus the frustration and plus a sense of selfishness, I'll say. I can't tell you how many people have told me, I don't care if I get it. I think I'm going to do fine. You know, you've told us that 85% of people do fine. And I'm like, yeah, you're absolutely right. But I'm concerned about the other 15%. That if everyone was wearing a mask when you were in the grocery store, two things happen. One, you're protecting yourself from others, essentially, because of a little bit with the mask. But more importantly, you're protecting them from you. You could be an asymptomatic carrier. So any of that will definitely, from a infection point of view, definitely help. But more importantly, from the mental health side of it, it's going to make me feel a little bit more comfortable. It's going to decrease my anxiety. And I hate to say it, but the ripple effect of this illness is going to be felt in many mental health issues over the next few months, as much as it has been in physical issues for many people.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I think you're going to start to see a lot more anxiety, a lot more depression. We already are. We've seen a lot more potential teen suicides or attempted teen suicides. So the social isolation as well as this hopelessness feeling has hit too many people here. Many who have lost their jobs now have turned to alcohol or have turned to drugs as a crutch. So we're going to start to see the substance abuse numbers go up. So we talk about the fever, cough, sore throat, pneumonia, but we do have to realize that the mental health is going to be in those individuals who were never impacted directly by COVID, but will still have an impact as we go forward.
Yeah, it is, I guess you could say depressing, you know, to have been locked down like this, you know, to have been in your homes for such a long time, to, you know, just the feeling of hopelessness. And if you have the news on for any amount of time, I mean, I do watch quite a bit of the news because I want to stay informed on what's going on. But I do know a lot of people who say, I can't watch the news. It makes me too upset. What do people do who are feeling upset, depressed, down? What's the solution to that?
Yeah, you have to remember that news, for the most part, is history. And I try to keep telling my staff and my doctors, hey, you know what? Let's not look back. Let's look forward. Let's look forward and what do we have coming in front of us? What do we have to do today, tomorrow, the next day, and what's going to be here 3 months from now? Let's stop looking back, stop looking at the blame, stop looking at those things, and let's move forward. The other nice thing is that with the weather change, you know, but today, not a good example, obviously, but like you said, this week is supposed to be very nice. Turn the TV off. Turn the TV off and get outside. Now, unless you're in a physician like yourself who has to educate many people over the airways, or physicians who need to keep on track of some things that we get from JAMA and the New England Journal of Medicine. We don't get a lot of our medical news from TV, obviously. But, you know, so those individuals need to be kept up to date. The other individuals, get outside right now and get away from the news. It'll help your mental health so much better.
312-981-7200 is our telephone number if you've got questions for Dr. Kevin Most. Mark, you are on WGN. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Simple question. Is it safe to wear short sleeves, and if one sneeze could infect me?
Two good questions, Mark. Yes, you can wear short sleeves. You don't have to be worried about being totally covered by any means. The skin, you know, the transmission of it, we're more concerned about our hands, and mainly because we take our hands, touch something, and then touch our face. So don't worry about wearing short sleeves. Absolutely not. Can one sneeze infect you? If that one sneeze was by a COVID-positive patient and you were within a couple feet of them, potentially, yes, it could infect you. So hopefully those individuals are either sneezing into a hanky, into their elbow, turning away from you, or if you see someone getting ready to sneeze, you're booking it. You're turning away because you don't want to. That would be the same whether this was a common cold, influenza, or COVID, though.
What happens if you you just happen to be by somebody who does sneeze? Is there anything that you can do? Can you go wash your face, rinse your, your nostrils? I don't know. What can you do?
Yeah. I mean, probably the biggest thing is to wash your face, wash your hands. And I mean, if you were that close and they were right there on top of you, you know, change your clothes. So, I mean, that way, any of the viral particle, unless you were breathing in at the exact same time they were sneezing, it's more likely that it's on your skin and on your face, and then that you would transmit that to your nose or mouth. So hopefully that happens very rarely, but if it does, probably the most important thing, go in and wash your hands and wash your face.
But to Mark's point about wearing short sleeves, or people who want to wear shorts for summertime as the weather gets a little bit nicer, if somebody sneezes and it gets on your arm, unless you touch your arm and then touch your face, you're probably okay, right?
Correct. Yeah. Unless you rub your hand on your arm and then touch your face, because you try to get your elbow in your mouth, you can't do it. So that's probably the biggest thing there is to just make sure your skin is clean as much as you can. That's why we've been reinforcing hand washing as much as we have for these past couple months.
Yeah. Mark, does that help you out?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Appreciate your call.
Welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much for the call. I was watching CNN yesterday, and I saw a report on there that said that the spray disinfectants that a lot of people are using are not effective. That the only way to truly clean a surface is to saturate it with either soap and water, as you've been saying all along, or some kind of sanitation fluids. But they have to really soak the area. That just spraying something with a Lysol or some other kind of disinfectant spray doesn't do the trick. Does that sound right to you?
Well, it's a combination of the contact to the surface and how long it's going to sit on that surface. If you look at us in doctor's offices right now, we spray bactericidal, viricidal on our exam tables, and we let them air dry. So it sits there long enough and it works. If the content of whatever you're using and spraying is upwards of 80% alcohol, then really you're okay of spraying it and wiping it down. It'll slowly evaporate as the alcohol evaporates, but alcohol at that percentage kills the virus right away. With soap and water, we have to realize the difference between soap and water and alcohol preps. If you think of the alcohol preps that you use now, the Purells, you kind of rinse your hands and then boom, it's gone, right? It has evaporated because there's so much alcohol. That kills the virus immediately. Soap and water actually break down the oil on your skin that holds those viruses in place, so that friction frees those up and then you rinse those. So two kind of different things. One is more chemical and one is more mechanical as far as how we're removing the virus from our hands.
So if you are going to use some kind of spray, it's saturation and let it air dry.
Yep, saturation, let it air dry. Matter of fact, you might even walk into some offices or buildings right now. I mean, I obviously go to the hospital almost every day. I walked in on Friday, and sure enough, in the physician lounge, on all the tables, there was a sign that said wet furniture, because I knew that they had just been into spray.
Yeah.
So it's exactly right. And especially when you think about cloth surfaces versus a leather or a hard surface or a stainless steel or marble or quartz or whatever, those are going to be much more important. The cloth is much more difficult to treat.
Yeah, I've been seeing on the news again how they're suggesting that airplanes be cleaned, and they're going in there with some kind of spray to spray all the surfaces down. So unless they're really spraying it to the point of saturation and letting it dry, it's really not as effective then.
Yeah, and it depends, again, what they're using. There's so many sprays right now that we even use in the hospital in our rooms. You know, aerosolized hydrogen peroxide, again, is one that's going to work quite well. So them spraying it down, if it has a high content of alcohol, it's going to do good. The one thing that's good about spraying is you can make sure you essentially have a cloud that envelopes it as it falls, versus I'm going to hope I don't miss anything on a table or on a surface.
Yeah.
So that's why you're starting to see a lot more of these aerosolized ways to clean hospital rooms, to clean surgical suites, to make sure that we get every little, hate to say nook and cranny, but every little nook and cranny,
yeah,
with the proper sterilizing solutions.
Yeah, that's why I thought I was doing a good job at home with the spray. I figured spray could get into areas where I couldn't with soap or water or brush, yeah, or a cloth, yeah, or something like that. I just didn't know. I would just wipe it down right away. So now I live in a very moist house because I'm letting everything just soak like crazy. Linda's in Des Plaines, and you're on WGN.
Oh, hi,
Linda.
Hi, it's Lisa. How are you?
Excuse me. Yes. Hello.
Oh, Dean, I love you, and I love you, Dr. Most. Thank you for your show. I wanted to ask you, my husband developed a bad cough last Friday. It continued to get a little worse. He never had a fever. We took his temperature. He went to the doctor. The doctor said, you have COVID-like patterns on your lungs, because he did a chest x-ray. They did give him a test. The test came back negative. And the doctor told him to isolate for 7 days. So he has been doing that. We've been very careful, leaving his meals at the door, sanitizing everything he may have touched, etc. But how likely is it that test was inaccurate?
Depending on which test you're saying. So the chest x-ray I look at as a test. And if the chest x-ray showed signs that looked like a COVID-type illness, That's, I would be very concerned and highly accurate there. As far as the nasal swab test that they may have done, two things there. One is the collection of it, and two is how quickly it's run and where it's run. We know that there's a false negative rate on some of these tests, especially ones that aren't run quickly. So I would be more concerned he has symptoms and he has a chest x-ray. Forget about the test. And I do the quarantine 7 to 10 days and kind of stay away from him just to make sure that he doesn't spread it to you. That being said, everyone in your family should be very aware of what the symptoms are and to look for those, because if you had a cough last Friday, chances are he was sick as of last Wednesday and probably exposed you Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday before he got into the doctor's office.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're all hyper aware of that, as are a few of his coworkers. So we're trying to be, you know, keeping that in mind, definitely, as we go from day to day.
Should the rest of the family members in that house, Kevin, get tested?
Not necessarily. I mean, I would think that the family members at this point are going to say, okay, you guys, if dad's got to be quarantined for 7 days, 10 days, let's us do also do quarantine for 7 to 10 days. That's only the smart thing to do, as you know, you had a direct, you know, exposure to someone who essentially was positive. If you were to test, get tested, and two of you were positive, what are you going to do? You know, now I look at it and say, you should all pretend like you're positive, although we know he is. So be really careful about what you're doing around the house now. As Dean was just talking about earlier, make sure you clean that environment as much as you can, but be very aware of what the virus can do. If this was a virus that we had like influenza, where I'd say, oh, you were exposed to influenza, boy, get in and get some Tamiflu because it'll protect you. We don't have those medications right now.
Right.
So be really careful in the family setting.
Yeah, quarantine really is the only thing you can do right now.
Yeah, we are. We're being extremely careful. And unfortunately, as careful as we're being and as careful as we were being even before we knew he was ill, there's really not a whole lot that we can do about it other than try and keep our immunity up and be as careful as we can moving forward and carefully keeping him quarantined from the rest of us. So, but I do appreciate your answer. Thank you so much. Hey,
Lisa, let me just ask you something because, you know, so much of really sort of the top line COVID-19 story right now are people wanting to get back out into public, wanting to get back into social places, wanting the shutdown to end, wanting theaters to open and bars to open and people out there. How do you, as someone whose family has been now touched by this, feel about people who want to go outside and put themselves in harm's way?
I am 55. I'm asthmatic. It's under control, but I'm asthmatic. I have felt since I first heard about this virus that there was a target on my back. So it's very scary. If I had my way, luckily I work from home, and my husband works with a very limited amount of people. But if I had my way, I would not go out until or unless there was a better treatment, a more accurate test, a vaccine, if that's even possible. So it's honestly terrifying. I struggle a lot every day with it.
Yeah, I think
so.
About,
I am not one of those people who wants to go out and get a haircut and get my nails done and see a movie. I'm very reluctant.
I guess I feel the same way about this, is that I can't control what other people are doing, going out into public places in groups without masks. So all I can do is protect myself, and that means staying inside more, isolating myself more, because people want to go have a drink somewhere. You know, they feel that's more important than the public safety. I appreciate your call.
I don't understand it. Thank you.
Lisa, keep your husband. Hey, Lisa, keep your husband's spirits up. You know, I assure you, he's sitting in that room and has a little guilt on his mind and concern that did he infect anybody. So please keep his spirits up. Joke with him as much as you can, you know, make little comments, because as long as his health is going in the right direction with this, he'll get over it. But I can tell you, in the back of his mind, not only does he feel isolated, but he also has that impending tomb of guilt that he spread this to someone else.
Yeah.
So make him laugh. It'll make him feel better.
I know it's nobody's fault. If anybody gets this, I know it's nobody's. It wouldn't be his fault for sure, because he's been as careful as possible. But it's one of those things where, you know, you can be careful and still still get it. But I do appreciate that. I will keep that in mind. And good luck. Thanks for that advice.
Yeah,
thank
good you. Luck with everything, Lisa. Thank you very much for your call. Karen in Lake Forest, you're on WGN.
Oh, hello. Good morning. So thank you for answering questions. My question is what do we do if we absolutely have to have, say, a repair technician come into our home at this time? I mean, I would expect that they would have a mask on and, you know, have booties on or whatever, their feet. But then after they've, you know, walked through your house and touched your appliance and all that, what do you do to, like, clean your house afterwards?
Yep. And if you listen to what we were talking about before, what I would do with any repair individual is limit where he's going to go in the home. If it's for the furnace or the air conditioner, bring him to the furnace. You know, if it's the air conditioner, fortunately it's outside. But if it's a plumber and that, watch where he's at. Watch the area that they're at. Please ask him just to restrict himself to that area. And then after he leaves, do essentially a deep clean in any area he has been at. That will really decrease your chance. The other big thing is most companies right now are telling their employees to not come to work if they have any symptoms. They're also checking their temperatures before they start work and while they're working. So they're minimizing even the chance that this technician could be sick. But if you say, boy, I really want to be really careful, they are as well. They're wearing booties, they're wearing masks, they're wearing gloves. So they really are minimizing what they're trying to do, provide a service that you need, while still protecting themselves and you. So from the anxiety point of view, clean the area that he was in, minimize his congestion in that area, and minimize his time in the house.
Yeah, other people coming into the house to do work, like cleaning people, maintenance people, as Karen was talking about, same thing. I mean, if it's a cleaning person coming in, is that safe, or is that something that probably is a good idea to not do with right now?
Well, you know, Dean, I look at it and say a couple things. One is the service that's provided, boy, they need that money as much as anyone else. So if you can continue to let them work, that's great. They're providing a service for you that'll decrease your anxiety. That's great. And we have to remember that the only place this virus lives for an extended period of time appears to be stainless steel. So if you're going to have a serviceman in and you're there with him the entire time he's there, go out for a two-hour walk. Go out for a three-hour time. Get away from here. Go to your grocery shopping. That period of time plus any cleaning will definitely minimize any chance. And if they had a mask on, they're not coughing and sneezing and getting virus all over your home. So they decrease the symptoms of the individuals working. They take their temperatures. They do all the protection. You add a couple hours on either side of that, and you're really going to be very safe.
Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern University Central DuPage Hospital. We always appreciate your time. Kevin, have a great week. Thank you so much, as always.
You got it, Dean. We'll talk soon.